Tonight on the In All Kinds Weather Forecast, yours truly, Chris Janes, returns to co-host with Neil Shulman, and we've got big Gator news to report. The Gators land not one, but two big commitments today. We'll break it all down and where the Gators roster stands heading into the summer months. This is the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Welcome in to another episode of the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Once again, your host, Chris Janes, back to record a podcast with Neil Shulman. Neil, it is good to be back here in the seat recording a podcast with you. And what a great day to come back as the Gators land not one, but two major commitments. One for this upcoming season out of the transfer portal and a big defensive lineman for the 2025 class. But before we get to all of that, I want to make sure that you all are subscribed to the In All Kinds Weather Forecast show on YouTube, as well as following us on all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our other YouTube channel, which is the OG YouTube channel, In All Kinds of Weather. Make sure to also like and subscribe, like and leave a comment down below for this show. It helps us reach all of Gator Nation. So Gator Nation got a big news today, Neil. But before we get to all that, Neil, I just want to say it's good to be back with you.
It's good to have you back, Chris. Welcome back, man. It's been 4 months, I think. No, 3 months.
Well, yeah, the Jack Caglione, right before the season started, we interviewed Jack Caglione. If anybody has not actually gone back and listened to that episode, please do so. It's on our YouTube channel as well as our podcast platforms. But
still relevant, you know, by the way. We have a lot of seasons played out, but there's still relevant stuff in there.
Absolutely. I mean, the guy is just absolutely crushing it right now in college baseball. I don't think arguably, I think definitely the best college baseball player in college baseball. He's going to be one of the top draft picks this summer, regardless of how the Gators finish this season, regardless if you make the NCAA tournament or not. It's a shame that we've wasted the talent, as Kevin O'Sullivan said earlier this past week, but still, it was an honor to interview him, and crazy to think that was 3 months ago, and here we are now in baseball season.
Wild, man. It's the way that O'Sullivan put it is one that I'm glad that he said, because if I said it, it would be just negative Neil all over again. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's one of the biggest wastes in Gator history. Another one, by the way, probably second place, also happening at the same time in the list of greatest wastes in Gator history, Ricky Pearsall in football. So to have both of those wastes happen at the exact same time is just kind of a microcosm of where the Gator program is right now. But you know, it's better to at least have some athletes to be proud of than none. I guess that's a bright side that we can take from this, because otherwise it is kind of dreary to think about the current state of Gator baseball this year. And honestly, I mean, after last year, Gator football is kind of dreary. The outlook was kind of dreary as well. Maybe we can say, okay, things are sort of starting to pick up on the recruiting trail. Is it real? Is it just another flash in the pan? We'll see. But we got something to talk about that's positive for a change.
Absolutely. And, you know, Neil, we celebrate the players currently here, but let's go ahead and celebrate the players of the future that could hopefully transform the Gators athletic program. Today, we got two commitments within an hour of each other. The first, and we'll go in order here, the first being 2025 defensive lineman Jeremiah McLeod of Havana, Florida, committed to Billy Napier in the 2025 class, bringing the Gators into the top 50 in the 247 rankings. Florida only right now has four commitments. As you mentioned in the last show, Peyton Joseph decommitted. So now the Gators finally got some good news on the trenches with a commitment of the defensive lineman in McLeod. He was committed to Mississippi State for the longest time, backed off that commitment last month after visiting Florida. Many at that point believed and gave it a foregone conclusion at that point that he was going to flip to Florida. 1 month later, he did so today. Billy Napier tweeting out the eyeglasses emoji right before noon. Good news there. And a big addition to the class. I mean, I think McLeod, you know, big kid, 6'3", 300 pounds, certainly figures to play on that interior side of the defensive line. The Gators potentially could be losing some guys this coming offseason. Certainly, and Cameron Jackson for sure. Caleb Banks is another. You brought in this transfer in Joey Slacken, but he only has 1 year of eligibility. So Florida has to fill a void in the interior side of the defensive line, and McLeod certainly fits that bill. So big pickup for the Gators. He also joins four-star edge player Jalen Wiggins along the defensive line out of Tallahassee, Florida. So the Gators starting to build once again another defensive line class, which has become a trademark through three seasons since Billy Napier has arrived on campus. And clearly, it doesn't matter who the defensive line coach is for the Gators. They continue to get good players, Neil. So big pickup for the Gators here. The second get of the gay came an hour later. And this is one that Gator fans have been anticipating for a long time. USC interior offensive lineman Jason Zandamela. He originally was the number one interior offensive lineman in the 2024 high school class, committed to USC, originally from Africa, but played his high school ball in Clearwater, Florida, not too far away from Gainesville, decided that he was homesick from his host family here in the States and wanted to transfer back to home. It was between Florida and UCF, and Florida ultimately winning out. A huge get for the Gators here on the interior side. Has 4 years of eligibility, has not even played a game of college football yet. So we'll see how he fits into this 2024 season, if he really plays at all, but certainly in a fantastic depth piece added and a player for the future. Neil, we talked so much about how the Gators have failed to get big time offensive linemen in the high school ranks. And Zandamela fits that bill. He hasn't played a game yet. Yes, he is falls into the line of Jameer Grimsley, a transfer in this new era of the transfer portal and high school recruiting. But he really was an interior offensive lineman coming out of high school last season. If you put him in the 2024 class along with Jameer Grimsley as a high school recruit, Florida would now have the number eight recruiting class in the country high school-wise. High school. And you think about how poorly Florida had was in the headlines for how it fell apart there on National Signing Day. If you put it all together, Florida ended up with a much better class than the one, the previous two, and certainly one that many thought they were going to end up with this year. But if you do it the way 247 does it, include him as a transfer, Florida now has the number seven class overall, including high school players and portal players combined. That ranks for fourth in the SEC. I mean, that is exactly where Florida really needs to be, that top quarter of recruiting rankings to compete against the best in this new SEC conference of 16 teams. So, Neil, we got Zandamela, we got McLeod. Your reaction to the big news today?
I mean, it's definitely nice to get more pieces on the lines of scrimmage. That's something that you can't ever have enough of. I don't know that I would have traded the losses that we had on the defensive line in this last class, Amaris Williams and Nasir Johnson, for Jeremiah McLeod and then one other guy on the offensive line. Like, I know some people are saying on social media, well, you see, like, we had the number three class and then people flipped out, but then when we lost those guys, but then there's no opposite reaction to then regaining those types of players, because I don't think that that McLeod is quite of that caliber. But then again, we also did sign LJ McCray as the headliner of the class, did add some other good players on that side as well. So I'm content with that last class, given where we are now, in terms of adding new players through the portal and now building for the future as well. But, you know, those losses are going to sting, as guys like, you know, Amaris Williams and Nasir Johnson are not making plays for Florida, but McLeod is definitely a good piece. I mean, he's not like that upper echelon of defensive linemen. I think he's a three-star on a lot of the rating systems.
High-end three-star, definitely. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's certainly a lot of people are saying that he's kind of undervalued right now in the recruiting services and could see a bump to that blue chip ranking, especially now that he's committed to Florida. That When you commit to a program like Florida in the Power Five, it certainly raises eyebrows, especially when you hit the camp circuit. You tend to go up in the rankings, but I digress.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can always kind of just pay a site to rank your kid for you. Kids, I mean, parents do that. It's not unheard of. So the rankings are somewhat subjective and easily swayed. But and regardless, it's a good pickup. It's a guy that can come in, and I think he's gonna have the size for sure. He's gonna bulk up another 10, 15 pounds of pure muscle. And in what is being said to be a new day for the new strength and conditioning program at Florida. So if he uses that to his advantage, he could become something good on Florida defensive line. He's maybe not White is technically there as I'd like him to be, because let's face it, he doesn't have 4 years to make an impact for the Gators and save Billy Napier's job, if that's where we're going to go with this, because that 4 years starts next year in 25. So that's not going to help Napier in 2024. But if Napier can stay the course, or if he stays regardless of who the coach is, I do see some upside here, but you have to throw that disclaimer in now every time you get a commit, because that's just what's happening.
And I get your point. The one thing I'll point out today, and I saw it quite a bit on the timeline, is the snarky comments from the fan base. Oh, well, that's a good get for the next coach. And, quite frankly, I think that the fan base really just, they have to just lighten up a little bit, right, Neil? I mean, we've got two solid commitments today. We've been complaining how the staff, honestly, the last three staffs, four staffs dating all the way back to Urban Meyer, has not been able to get elite offensive line talent consistently. And now they've brought in a top 100 kid and Zendamela. Like, I think fans need to be happy with that and hope that he can make an impact, oh, hopefully an instant impact, but at least provide depth for this season and be a huge, piece for the future seasons. Because I got news for fans. I think Billy Napier is likely going to be in Gainesville in 2025, barring a complete and utter collapse in 2024. And the reason being is because I think DJ Lagway, people want to see Napier have at least one season with him. I think he's going to get 4 years to get this thing right. And, I'm going to tease it now. I've got a piece, or a, not a piece, but a show that I'm going to be dropping, kind of talking about exactly the uphill climb that Napier has had at UF since coming here. Like, Dan Mullen in a 4 year period only had nine high school players get drafted, and that includes Tyron Hopper, who transferred out of the program.
Does that include James Houston? No, Houston signed under McElwain.
Under McElwain. So, I mean, that's pretty atrocious. And I'm going to give you a comparison. Kirby Smart in 2018 had 18 get drafted. That's what we're up in 1 year. Did double what Mullen did in four. And I haven't had a chance to dive into what Napier's done since he's gotten here, guys, maybe from the portal that he's brought in. But I'm willing to say it's probably, I mean, I can at least think of two off the top of my head, and Osiris Torrance and Ricky Pearsall. That almost is a third of the way there in 2 seasons. I think that Napier, certainly the caliber of athlete that he's starting to bring in, will yield results if Gator fans give him time and he stays the course. But of course, you can't have a collapse in 2024. You gotta
You
win
gotta
some
make a
games.
bowl game. You cannot miss a bowl game again.
No, I would tend to agree, but we'll see what happens. We'll get a little bit more into the roster here and the makeup of that. Maybe if we think Florida's able to make a bowl game based on that, but
I
nonetheless.
didn't talk about Zandamella. I forgot. I just talked about I just talked about Jeremiah McLeod. Zandamella is a big pickup. Like, that's one. Because yeah, I mean, I was talking about McLeod being maybe a depth piece, maybe needing some time to grow. But you're Zandamel is a guy that, I mean, yes, he did grow up playing rugby in Mozambique, Africa. So the game of football is like 4 years old to him. So he's gonna need some technical improvement, but he's already picked it up pretty quick. Like, he was a, I think, a center or a guard. He was an interior offensive lineman. He was a center. He was a center for his high school team in Clearwater, Florida, and they won a lot of games with him there. And he seemed to have taken a big stride in between his first and his second year playing football, the coaches said. So that's a guy that you get him on campus at Florida. Maybe he's not a day one starter. I know Gator fans kind of want an instant impact guy on the offensive line just because what the situation there was last year. But this is a guy that maybe by midseason, if not by the start of his sophomore year, should be playing meaningful snaps for the Gators. So that is a pickup that you're looking at. All right, we're building for the future, right? We're going to talk about the Gators' future with Napier. Is he going to stay? Is he going to not? Well, you said, well, maybe if he, I mean, DJ Lagway is going to be the guy, right? So maybe you should give him a year with Lagway. So, all right, great. Now who's going to be blocking for him? Zandamella goes 20% of the way towards answering that question.
Yeah, absolutely. And Zander Miller now is the fifth blue chip offensive lineman that Billy Napier has brought in since arriving to campus from the high school ranks. That includes Najee Harris, Roderick Kearney, Caden Jones, Fletcher Westfall, and now Jason Zendemel. So big pickup there. And, you know, a good trend emerging that Napier is starting to, you know, we know that he's able to recruit the defensive line effectively. We've seen that. They've brought in numerous blue chippers there. The depth has certainly been amassed, and I think we're going to see a huge improvement on that side of the ball this year. But the offensive line is really starting to build, and they have shown an affinity also to bring in some decent transfers, obviously, in Osiris Torrance. We'll see if Brandon Crenshaw Dixon and Devon Manuel could provide some instant impact this year while somebody like Zander Miller develops. But huge, huge get for the Gators. And, you know, Neil, we may not be done yet because the Gators now Zander Miller brings us to 85 scholarship players, but the staff doesn't seem to be done just yet. There may be an additional player from a school that we all know about that brought us Ricky Pearsall, and that is Arizona State wide receiver Elijah Badger. Elijah Badger, as of this recording, is expected to visit Arizona and is planning a visit to Florida, according to 247 Sports. He already visited Washington last week. He was an honorable mention all Pac-12 selection while at Arizona State, and he has had at least 700 yards in the last two seasons. So this is a guy who actually put up more production at Arizona State than Ricky Pearsall even did coming out of Arizona State to Florida 2 years ago. And with seven touchdowns in 2022, three touchdowns in 2023, double digits the last 2 years, this is a guy that's going to be a nice depth piece for Florida as we continue to build that receiver room and playmakers. You know, we brought in Chimere Dike. We're hoping for a jump for Khalil Jackson this year. Obviously, we know about what Eugene Wilson can do, a freshman All-American player. And we're hoping to see some emergence from one of two, Andy Jean, Ada Mizell. But this is a guy where you bring him in, your receiver room is set, Neil, because then you could really start to play chess with the pieces on the board of the receiver room of who you play, create mismatch in the passing game, and it gives Graham Mertz an extra player to play with for next season. We'll see what happens. I understand that there is some medical potential issues for Badger, so we'll see. Hopefully he's able to clear his physical, and then if that is the case, decides to come play his last years of eligibility. I believe he has 2 years of eligibility left at the University of Florida. So, Neil, what are your thoughts on the potential for Badger coming to Gainesville and what he would potentially mean for the roster?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it. You hit on what I was going to say at the very end there. There are some questions about is it going to work out just from a physical standpoint. But if he does come to Florida, then that's great because, I mean, I've heard a lot of the good things about Aiden Mizell, but I mean, nonetheless, there's still only one real proven receiver that Florida has right now on this roster, and that's Trey Wilson. So and he had injury problems last year too, so it's not like there's really a sure thing in that receiver room right now, aside from I'll have to say Wilson. But you need more guys who can do different things on the outside. You still, I mean, Mizell would be that burner that can just take the top off the defense. Wilson would be that, just, I guess, I don't know. I don't even want to define him as like a slot guy because he can run deep routes, but he's, you know, I guess we just call him the everything guy at receiver. And then you would have another Arizona State Sun Devil come in and not obviously the exact same type of receiver as Pearsall, but would be, I think, similarly productive if he's able to step in and do the physical things that he's allowed to do at Florida. We'll just leave it at that. But definitely would be a nice pickup for Florida, but, you know, also needing to see other guys step up there.
You're replacing a receiver who had almost 1,000 yards last season, and that's very difficult to do. Certainly Eugene Wilson can be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I think he has the best chance of any Florida receiver since the last one to do it was Taylor Jacobs in 2002. But he also was highly productive last year. So you're basically saying Eugene Wilson needs to double his production, and then somebody else has got to step up and be the production that Eugene Wilson provided last year, which was, I believe, 600 yards, almost 600 yards of receiving yards. So Now, okay, who can do that? Is that DK? Is that Aiden Mizell? Or is that Badger? I mean, we'll see, but I think having a plethora of options can only improve this roster. And Florida's not in a position to be selective here. I think they need to amass as much talent as possible before the 2024 season starts, whoever that may be. Hopefully it's Elijah Badger. I don't know if it is or isn't, but I know that if you give Graham Mertz another player that he can drop back and have options for in the passing game, it's going to bode well for him down the line. And let's look, hey, if he ends up coming and plays 2 years at Florida, then you've set up BJ Lagway with a playmaker in next season, because then you have Eugene Wilson in his third season, Badger another year in college and going into his fourth. You know, then he'll really have some options, because Florida does lose Chimere DK next year. He's only coming to Florida for one season. And you know, the way the transfer portal works, you could lose some guys that you thought were going to slot in there and play for you that you had originally recruited, and then they leave the program. So you always have to be prepared for the inevitable change in college football that we all see now. So overall, I think it would be a huge get for the Gators. We'll see if it does come to fruition. We hope the visit goes well, and we also hope that he is able to, you know, get cleared medically and be able to play his college ball here at the University of Florida, or somewhere for that matter, because we certainly don't want to see Slitty sit out of playing. All right, Neil. So we've told the fans about the commitments today. We talked about a potential commitment down the line. Springtime's over. It's summer months now. This is where guys have to do things on their own. They have to hit the weight room. They have to work on their own passing routes, whatever it may be that they need to hit the jug machine. They need to hit the sleds. So if you're on the line, the guys got to work hard in the offseason. But now we do have a 85-man roster that is now here. We did lose a couple of transfers in this window that was the April transfer window. It's now closed as of April the 30th. We have 85. We could potentially see, if we do bring in Badger, we would need to get 85 against him. Somebody would have to leave the program, be the odd man out. Who that is, we do not know. But overall, what do we think of the roster as constructed at this moment? Where do we think we've filled some holes? And where do we think we have some holes that still may need to be filled before the fall camp starts?
I mean, it's kind of hard to evaluate that just because last year we thought we filled holes on the offensive line with Mike Emiskua and Damian George, and that didn't really work out so well. So I guess we can answer that question from a paper standpoint. I'm happy with the take of Brandon Crenshaw Dixon as a tackle. I again, it's a case of you got to see it to believe it, but I think that Billy did what he could do from a recruiting standpoint there, on the offensive line. I think that the defensive line also was improved immensely, just from, if nothing else, just LJ McCray. That in itself, that is an elite defensive talent. I mean, everyone's talking about Lagway being the headliner of this class, which rightfully so, but just for a second, put him aside. LJ McCray would be the headliner of pretty much any other recruiting class in the country. He is that disruptive on the defensive line. And then now is the point where you can realize you don't have to take up DJ Lagway because we got him too. That's a nice little surprise. See, we're being positive here. No, but the defensive line also is going to return guys like Cameron Jackson and Caleb Banks. So I think just keeping things stable there, plus the addition of an LJ McCray, an elite talent there, is going to be very, very beneficial for Florida next year. After, you know, they did some good things last year, but just didn't get the job done by and large, and especially in terms of rushing the passer. Linebacker room, I guess we'll go position by position. Linebacker room, I mean, Shamar James will be back, so getting him back from injury is going to be very helpful, of course. Getting an influx of talent there in the true freshman department, like guys like Miles Graham and Aaron Childs, obviously very helpful. Maybe those guys will have a learning curve, but I mean, we talk about them stepping in and replacing a guy like Scooby Williams, who goes to Texas A&M. I mean, I liked Scooby. I thought he did some good things at Florida, but you know, also did some not good things there. Also, some additional senior presence. I got like Derek Wingo, a fifth-year senior, I think is going to provide some veteran leadership there. You can't really have problems with that. So, You know, I like what we have at linebacker. Secondary, I think, is a question mark. Definitely some questions raised by that spring game that we saw. A couple of busts in the secondary there. A new guy in Jaquizzi Bridges, I think, is a guy that could be one of those physical tacklers that we actually, I thought we had in Jaden Hill, but obviously we no longer have him. So that'll be nice to at least, you know, keep that piece of what Jaden Hill brought. And also, I think he's a little bit better in some cover situations. I like our secondary too, overall, just in terms of what we got from the high school ranks a couple of years ago, last couple of years. A guy like Jakeem Jackson and Sharif Denson, I think, can take big steps forward in these in these sophomore seasons are about to have. Also, Devin Moore, I think, can take a nice jump. So I like what we have there. The question, like I said, is just going to be, you know, do we see it play out the way we think it's going to on the field? Does the paper match the wins and losses that we see on the field? And offensively, I think we're good. I think that, I mean, obviously Mertz is going to be another, he's going to give us another year of good production at quarterback. I think the offensive line is just the question. You know, you have to see what we have there. I mean, the running back situation, obviously you lose the explosive home run hitter in ETN, but on the other hand, and I'm not saying Florida has this. I very clearly said, I do not think Florida has this right now. But in theory, I would trade an elite running back for an elite offensive line and a mediocre running back, because all the running back has to do is just not fumble, and the line will pave the way for him. He doesn't have to make these jump cuts or these ridiculous like Madden spin moves or jukes. Just do what the line gave you the ability to do and just fall forward for 7 yards a pop. No one else is going to care about anything else. So Florida obviously doesn't have that right now. But point being, if the line takes a big step forward this year, the running game as a whole will take a big step forward, even without Trevor Etienne, just because Montrell Johnson, and I guess, you know, you could talk about a Trayvon Webb in there too, but it's Johnson's running back for him. So we kept him, and all he has to do is just not fumble, and the running game gets better. And then the receivers is the other question. So Arliss Boardingham, a tight end, is going to be someone that I think Mertz is going to lean on as a security blanket of sorts. He's going to need Mizell to keep going on those improvements that we've heard about in terms of his body. He wasn't really there as a freshman. We're going to need to see more of the jumps that we saw from him this offseason continue, get another 5-10 pounds of muscle mass, and keep that speed sharp, keep those feet quick and crisp, I guess. Maybe there were some questions about that last year too, but keep taking those strides and become that deep threat that we haven't really had in a while. So honestly, I think the roster is about as good as you realistically could ask it to be after a 5-7 season and a 6-7 season the year before. At this point, it's just a matter of, you know, you got to go win games. Got to go win games.
Is it better or worse than where it ended last season?
I think it's better. I think it's better. You got to see it. You know, yeah. I thought the roster was better in 23 than it was in 22, and we won fewer games with almost the exact same schedule. I guess you swap out Texas A&M for Arkansas, but virtually the same schedule, and we won fewer games.
I guess the way you don't really know necessarily, like putting high school recruiting aside, like we all know recruiting, like we're continuing to recruit quality players in the high school ranks, guys that are good evals, that are going to make it, that could get drafted in 3 to 4 years. Like, I truly believe we're taking guys right now like that. We're seeing a higher quality of athlete come in from the high school ranks. The portal is where you don't know, because, you know, 1 year you could be successful in the portal and get some hits, and you know, you get those Osiris Lawrences, you get those Ricky Pearsalls, they get drafted, they're huge contributors. But then again, you could get those Micah Mascuas who aren't that don't pan out at Florida, that don't make it. You know, you took a Manny Nunnery last year. Manny Nunnery gave up the 4th-and-17 play now in the game against Missouri that resulted in us not making a bowl game, and he transferred out of the program. Didn't work out. It's just unfortunate.
And then came right back.
Yeah, came back, got an interception in the spring game, and then left
again. And then
again.
Left again.
You know, so, you know, it is kind of a – it's a catch-22. You don't know what hand you're going to get in a portal necessarily. You can only do your best. I think the roster is better, but there certainly are the questions. I mean, for example, I think if nothing else, Graham Mertz should. I'll go position by position here. I think Graham Mertz, if he plays exactly the same as he did last year, we're in good shape. Doesn't turn the ball over, takes care of the football, makes good decisions, has nearly 3,000 yards of passing, same production. Florida should be good. Then you bring in a backup who is the future of the program and potentially a generational talent in DJ Lagway, at the very least, a top five player in the high school ranks. Haven't gotten one of those in a long time. So that room's better for sure. And you brought in a third stringer in Clay Millen, who, if nothing else, provides a really solid depth piece. So that room's upgraded. Running back is where I'm not sure because I agree. Montel Johnson is that is his room. And he, I believe, will do a good job. But then behind him, there's a lot of question marks, like unproven players. Treyon Webb has shown flashes, but he didn't do it necessarily against the big competition. Kanan Daniels, Jaden Ball had great springs, but they're freshmen. And my question is lightning and thunder. Montrell Johnson was the thunder. Trevor Etienne was the lightning, that elite playmaker who could make a play when you needed it. That big touchdown run against Tennessee, they got the swamp going crazy, that turned the momentum, and then the avalanche of 26 unanswered points ensued, in which Tennessee could not recover from. Who's that running back for the Gators this year? Could it be Jeff or Jaden Ball? Potentially could be that guy, but he's a freshman. You're going to be relying on a freshman to potentially do that. Kanan Daniels, I think, is a really solid running back, but to me, he's the same running back as Montrell Johnson. Big-bodied, bruiser, is not afraid of contact. So we'll see. Receiver, I think the receiver room could be better if you get the emergence of somebody who you recruited, like an Andy Jean or Aiden Mizell. Andy Jean's been hurt pretty much his entire time at Florida. Hopefully he gets healthy. Aiden Mizell showed a lot of flashes in the deep passing game. Is it going to translate in an SEC game when we go to Knoxville, when we go to Starkville, when we play Georgia and Jacksonville? Will it translate? Eugene Wilson, we know who he is. We know who he is. Hopefully he avoids a sophomore slump. Hopefully he puts up 1,000 yards receiving. Is that added layer of offense that we have not had? But can he stay healthy? Because he did miss some time last year. And also, now that he's receiver one, everyone's queuing in on him. So, because last year he was receiver two behind Ricky Pearsall. So that's why I believe he was able to find some of that success. Can he find that success now that he's receiver one, sustain it, and enhance his performance? And then who behind him comes up? Is it Shimmery Dike? Is it Khalil Jackson? Is it Aiden Mizell? Is it Elijah Badger if he makes it in the program? I don't know. Tight end room, I think, obviously it's Arliss Boardingham and Hayden Hansens. They provide different things to that room. And then you have the unknown of Keon Zipper if he recovers fully from that ACL tear, which took him out the entire last season. Offensive line, I agree. I like the Brennan Crenshaw-Dixon pickup. I think you have three solid tackles now to rotate between Crenshaw-Dixon, Barber, as well as Devon Manuel. And now you could slot George where it's his natural position at guard. And now that gives you depth at guard and guys like Cam Waits, Damian George. Does Roderick Kearney take that step forward? Does Najee Harris take that step forward at the guard position? Center, it's pretty cut and dry. Jake Slaughter ended up winning that job and not relinquishing it last year. I think, honestly, played better than Kingsley. And I think now that we have him, I like him at that center spot. I think he's going to hold it down. And then hopefully you see somebody emerge from that freshman group that we brought in. Does a guy like Fletcher Westfall play? Florida has historically had some freshman offensive linemen that they end up panning out of Florida. They play their freshman year. Can a guy like him or Mike Williams or Marcus Mascall, Noel Portenhagen, big size right there at Portenhagen. We don't know, a lot of unknowns. We just brought in Enoch Wagnoy of Germany, another international player. Could he be that guy? And then obviously we brought in Jason Zandamella. We don't know though if he's going to be ready to play in year one. Like you said, Neil, he's raw. He was a rugby player, still transitioning to football life only a few years into his career. Defensive side of the ball, this is really where the key of the season is going to be. Is the defense better than it was last year? Because if the offense remains the same, has the same production as last year, but the defense is just average, we'll probably win at least, I would say, 6 to 7 games, conservatively speaking. But they're going to have to tackle. There can't be coverage bust. Like, you can't let a guy scamper 85 yards in his Heisman reel for a touchdown. Those stuff can't happen anymore. Florida has to improve on the defense side of the ball. I think they have, and we've seen in the spring, the tackling seemed to be better in the spring game. Yes, there were some coverage busts, that stuff that's going to have to get cleaned up for the season. But the tackling was better, and that was a huge issue last year that led to a lot of problems where Florida just got gassed, they got tired, and quite frankly, it looked like they gave up. So is that secondary equipped to do it? I think Jason Marshall coming back for his final season in Gainesville, he's got a lot to prove. He's a guy that many pegged as potentially an early draft entry going into 2023, didn't live up to it. Hopefully he lives up to it in 2024 so he can get drafted. He's one of the few of the Palmetto Five that, you know, we're still waiting to see if he's the one that gets drafted. A lot of those were making the rounds earlier this week after the
all-time
NFL
bust.
Draft.
That was my tweet that went out there. All-time bust. We can go through that too, but go ahead and finish your
No, I mean, I think if guys like Marshall, Devin Moore, Jakeem Jackson takes a step forward in his second year, Sharif Denson holds down that star nickel spot, you know, that's where I think that secondary could be really good. And I agree. We brought in safeties for a reason, and Tre'Quezy Bridges and DJ Douglas and Asa Turner. There's a reason we brought three safeties in that room, because that safety room did not get it done last year. Did not get it done. Bryce Thornton, Jordan Castell, hopefully they take a step forward in their sophomore year. It is incredibly difficult to play safety in the SEC as a true freshman. Those guys did it, and they did it admirably, but not great. I think Jordan Castell has the most potential to become an all-conference safety out of the two, but there's a reason we brought in three transfers in that room.
Yeah.
Hopefully, one of those guys emerges, and you then pair them with a guy that's been in the program for a year, and either Thornton or Castell. Hearing some things also about Aaron Gates, who had a pretty good spring. We'll see if he slots into that safety spot or that nickel spot. I've heard he could play potentially both. So overall, I do think the roster is better, but there are still questions. There are still questions after taking all the transfers, all the high school players. And ultimately, you know, these are some good wins we got today. There were some good wins. Oh, and I didn't even mention the linebacker room. The linebacker room, you brought in a guy like Grayson Howard, who's becoming that alpha next to Shamar James in the middle. So you got Shamar James and Grayson Howard. That right there, those were some big wins for Florida in the portal when we got Grayson Howard. If he can hold it down there in the middle too, and then you have maybe Myles Graham, Aaron Childs as a freshman, of course, come in and play, then that room is, I think, just better. So overall, I do think we made some improvements. We brought some guys back that we needed to bring back in Cameron Jackson, Caleb Banks, Kelby Collins, but now you've got to show improvement. You've got to show improvement. Otherwise, you know, it's a tougher schedule. There's a scenario where this roster maybe on paper as well as just talent wise is better, but the record's not going to reflect it. And I think that's the biggest fear of a lot of fans going into the summer before fall camp begins in just 3 short months here. But I think that the staff did as good as they possibly could have. Maybe a couple of misses here and there, as there always are in recruiting, but I do feel a little more confident coming out of the spring that this isn't going to be a complete, utter collapse in the fall.
I guess that's one way to put it. Again, though, you can't ever know that, because there are always going to be some guys who pan out even when you thought for sure they were going to work out for you. That's just how it goes. I mean, Jason Marshall, a five-star that we added, we thought, oh, it's a can't miss. That's going to be, you know, Dan Mullen's star pupil in the secondary. Well, it hasn't really worked out that way. I mean, a guy like Asa Turner is a perfect example. Like, he comes from Washington. He's played the national championship game. He was there for a couple of years before. So you think, all right, well, he's got that winning pedigree in him, but maybe there's something about the scheme that just doesn't click with him. Maybe he doesn't pan out. That's just a hypothetical. It could happen to anybody. Like, at this point with Billy Napier's team, I just need to see it for me, you know, for myself to believe it. Palmetto Five, by the way, you gotta shout that out. That is one of the most amazing, just like, high school wide busts that I've ever seen. So if you remember, like, in 2020,
there were a lot of fights on Twitter between Florida and Miami fans over that too, which is just hilarious.
Yeah,
now thinking about it in retrospect,
and there still are, like, oh, your guys busted worse than ours did. The Miami takes were worse. At least the Florida guy stayed his whole career at Florida. like that, they're still going at it. But yeah, real quick, Leonard Taylor, Miami, undrafted. Breshard Smith, who was a four star. Taylor was a five star. Taylor is a five star. Four star receiver Breshard Smith mostly played on special teams, transferred to a program that's still best known for getting the death penalty, SMU. That's okay. No, didn't work out. Savion Collins didn't even make it to Miami. He went to another school in Miami, FIU, played in two games. That was it. That was the totality of his career. Corey Collier went to Florida, transferred to Nebraska, then transferred again to Florida A&M. Jason Marshall is the last one standing at his original school that he first committed to. And though he certainly has not lived up to his five-star billing, is the only one you can even say somewhat played
I think
out the
he
way.
didn't he get freshman all conference honors? Am I remembering that correctly?
He might have.
His freshman, I think he got fresh
He
or it
might
was
have.
some sort of
He was definitely
honors.
player of the week 1 week. He was
Yeah,
a
like
freshman of the week 1 week.
he's the most decorated out of all of them.
Right.
And
That's.
I think if you honestly put a bet on it, would get drafted next year. Not saying
Okay.
he's a first round pick or even a day two pick, but like I think he
Someone
gets
will take a flyer
drafted.
on him. Someone will take
Yeah.
a chance on him
I mean,
late.
if Marco Wilson could get taken after his antics, who you know, Jason Marshall has to probably get at least a shot. You would think. Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out next April.
No, I just gotta. This is a little bit of breaking news. I just
Okay, let's hear it.
gotta.
I love when this happens on the
Oh, it's
show.
not. It's nothing really huge, but I just got verified on Twitter.
Hey, oh wait, so does that mean you paid? Did you pay Elon for that?
No.
You didn't pay Elon? Wow. Okay. Do you get editing privileges?
Editing privileges, and I get longer posts. I knew. You know what? I had posted the longer post before. I guess that was when I should have known. I didn't even think about it then. I didn't have the check. I just got the check mark. I just got the notification. But a couple of days ago, I posted a longer post. But yeah, I can edit stuff. I can post longer videos, meaning we can bring this show to you guys on Twitter in longer forms. Yeah,
That's
that's
a good
cool.
plus.
That's
That's a good
cool.
plus. Yeah. Share with
That's
your
cool.
friends now. Share with your friends
Yeah,
and
I'm
watch
officially
it on
me.
Twitter.
You're on
Yeah, no,
Pantheon
I love
Twitter. The
that.
brand is officially the brand.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's yeah, but so I mean, look, the roster, the point I was making with Palmetto 5 was that you can have a guy that looks to be a slam dunk on paper and it just doesn't work out for reasons that you can't predict. So, like on paper, I'm thrilled that we got Jameer Grimsley. I'm thrilled that we got Deontre Robinson. I'm thrilled that we got Asa Turner. I'm thrilled that we got Pop Howard. They've done nothing on the field in the fall for the Florida Gators. So I'm hopeful. I think that the roster situation is better, but I would draw a very, very thick line between the roster is better and we're going to see better results on the field. Because for the reason you just mentioned with the schedule, that's anything but a guarantee.
And the last point I'll make before we wrap tonight is that just goes to show why stars matter. Because you have to get as many as possible knowing that they're going to be bust. It happens every single year. The percentages of a guy trying to make it to the NFL are this much. So even the higher probability that you, or the more four and five stars that you get, the data shows they will more likely get drafted. And the more players that get drafted, will mean you had a more talented roster and therefore more success probably at the college level. That bears out with the fact that Kirby Smart in the 2018 class, which won his first national championship, the school's first in 41 years, had 18 guys get drafted. Dan Mullins in his four classes, only nine. I mean, that is a perfect example of
That's
why it
embarrassing,
matters.
by
I
the
mean,
way.
But that and that kind of shows too the level of rebuild that this program was going under, and I don't think Gator fans truly came to grips with it until it really dawned on me after the NFL draft when we only had one guy drafted in Ricky Pearsall, and
And he was a
at least he
transfer.
was a first round pick. The 49ers reached on him and gave him a first round flyer, but that is just incredible that it took that. So if it weren't for that, Florida would have been over for the first time since 1957 of having a draft. I got drafted. It was the first time since 1980 We only had one. I mean, it's just insane stuff. And it really dawned on me this past weekend when the draft happened of how far Florida has fallen as a program.
And that's embarrassing too. Like if you think about it, Ron Zook and Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain are pretty much considered to be royal failures at Florida, and
Actually, Jim
yet.
McElwain had a lot of guys drafted. I mean, that's kind of crazy to, like, if you go back and look at his players, the amount that got drafted, way more than Dan Mullen. And
He
if
gave
you
us
look at
Trask and Tony
the
and
nine,
Pitts
exactly. Well, Pitts was
and
signed by
Pierce.
Mullen. So technically, Pierce and Pitts fall under
Yeah,
a
but
Mullen class, but we know who really recruited them to
yeah,
Florida.
Pierce. Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean
So.
that like even the past like Gator coaches who didn't work out recruited better. So go back to that day in Jacksonville when Dan Mullen is like disgusted with Dave Waters for daring to ask him a recruiting question, and Mullen gives him like, "Well, we'll talk about that when it's recruiting season." Just like middle fingers up at Dave, like "F you for daring to ask me about something that's pretty important in my job." Well, now we know why, because when Jason Marshall is like one of your best recruits. I'm not talking about guys that you inherited or had other, staffers kind of help you with it that already had a connection. But like, that's one of your best recruiting wins from a I did hard work to get him standpoint. Like, that's the best, one of the best cases you have to show for it. That is a pretty strong indictment. But you know what? He is getting paid $12 million to just post feet pics on a beach in front of a pool. So I guess we're both happy right now.
I actually misquoted. We've had a guy drafted every year since 1953. 1952 was the last time Florida didn't have a draft pick. And I was correct. 1980 was the last time Florida only had one draft pick. That was Scott Brantley to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think a lot of Gator fans might know who Scott was. Had a pretty terrible injury in his time at Florida. My mom was actually at the game when they wheeled him off the field in the 1979 season against Georgia Tech. A little bit of Gator history there. But
Only
I mean, yeah, I
tie.
mean, if you go back, and I'm pulling it up now. There's a lot of Gators that were drafted, so I'm trying to scroll to it. But if you go back to like the guys that were drafted in the Jim McElwain era, pretty much starting, I guess you could say what 20, technically 2018. That would be like really the start of like true. Like you had Taven Bryan, Duke Dawson, Antonio Callaway, Johnny Town. Oh, Johnny was a Muschamp player, so was Marcel. So you right there had Taven Bryan, Duke Dawson, Antonio Callaway. That's three. 2019, you had Juwan Taylor, Ja'Kai Polite, CJ Gardner-Johnson, Beauchamp Joseph, Jordan Scholar, all Jim McElwain players. So that's one, two, three, four, five, six. That brings them up to nine in two drafts. Nine. Mullen only had nine and four. And then the 2020 season, you had CJ Henderson, Van Jefferson, Jabari Zuniga, Jonathan Grenard, LaMichael P. Ryan, Freddie Swain, Tyreek Evans. So Grenard was a Mullen player.
Transfer.
Transfer in, so he gets credit for that one, and same with Van Jefferson. So right there, that's one, two, three, four, five more that were McElwain players. That brings his total to 14.
Don't forget James
14.
Houston.
James, he wasn't drafted in
Or
2020.
21, 21.
21, yeah, I'm
Yeah.
getting to 21 now because in 21 you had Kyle Pitts, technically a Mullen guy, but was recruited by Mac. So then Tony was definitely a Mac guy. That was one of those diamond in the roughs guys that he got.
Trask.
Kyle Trask, Marco Wilson, Evan McPherson was a Mullen guy. Sean Davis, another McElwain guy. Darrell Slayton, McElwain guy. Stone Forsythe, McElwain guy. So right there, I mean, that brings his total to 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 20 and 4. 20 and 4 years. Now, that's still a far cry from
Richardson,
where
though, we're going to talk. I mean, that was
that
Mullen's
was
guy.
Mullen. So, like, but I mean, even still, like, that is, I mean, that right there, 20 guys compared to the nine, it's double. And that's a coach that got fired at Florida. I mean, it really goes to show, like, how bad it got. So
I
I'm
mean, part
hoping
of
that
that, part of
Nate.
that, part of that, though, is just a lack of development, too. But
For
yes,
sure. For sure.
obviously, yes, of course, it starts with recruiting. That's where everything starts. So, yeah, there's no defense of that. The offensive line especially was pretty glaring too. Because like remember, like the Muschamp and McElwain years, you would still have some offensive linemen just get drafted pretty high, like DJ Humphreys, like a David Sharp, like would get drafted. So you had some. I mean, and to be fair, Napier did too with Sibo. he did identify him first at Louisiana and then brought him over to Florida. So that was a fully Napier development process there. But just the lack of numbers aside from him on the offensive line is pretty astonishing. And that is where football is won and lost in the trenches. So, kind of not a surprise that Florida hasn't had a lot of guys drafted there when you look at the win total the last couple of years.
Agreed. Well, Neil, I think that about does it. This was a really good show. It was good to be back, and hopefully can be back a little bit more. Appreciate everybody I don't know if they missed me or not, but whether you did or didn't, I'm back, and it was good to be back in the chair tonight behind the mic. And make sure that if you do like all of our content, to like and subscribe our show on our YouTube. Leave a comment down below what you think of the transfer portal haul overall this season, what you think it means for the 2024 season. And also head on to allkindsweather.com/merch to purchase some merch. Neil's sporting it today. He's got that looks like a dry fit t-shirt as well as hat. Go on there to check it all out. Deck yourself out this summer for wear that Gator merch proudly, no matter what the results are out on the field. We thank you all for tuning in tonight for another episode of the All Kinds of Forecast. And until next time, go Gators.
And also stay on the lookout for maybe doing some different things on Twitter now that on All Kinds of Weather is verified. That's a cool new feature. I truly don't know what that's going to mean for our content, but that does open the door for potentially some changes. Also can get some more listener involvement. I know Elon is rolling out the updates there, but we want this to be an interactive thing. So if you have comments also on Twitter and on Facebook, whatever platform that we may post these video clips on, we want to hear them regardless of where you're hearing this on. And Spotify too, we can get comments on there too. So wherever you're listening, as well as YouTube, watching, obviously, let us know what you think. I didn't mean to steal your thunder, Chris. It is good to have you back.
But it's all good.
I had to throw those things in there.
It's all good. Yeah, no, we're excited about that. It's good news and didn't even have to pay him for it. So make sure if you're following on the Twitter account there for those updates in All Kinds of Weather. And we'll see you next time for another episode of the All Kinds of Weather Forecast. Have a good night, everyone.